Hey everybody, just before you get started with this best and worst and otherwise 2025 TV, games, films, all that sort of stuff for this podcast, just before you get into the episode, just a little note about certain sound levels. Some of the sound was a little bit up and down in the podcast. There's a few different things that kind of happened there. I've tried to level it out the best I can. Some bits are a little bit quiet, some bits are a little bit too loud, but I've tried to, like I said, live it out the best I can. You can hear everybody and all that sort of thing, so that's not a particular problem. It's not like an audio error situation. It's just certain sound level things. And unfortunately, with Audacity, it's easier to make things quieter than louder. So there's a few things where, like, someone's audio was quiet, but not, like, too quiet, and then the next audio was way too loud. So I, like, turned down the really loud bits of audio, turned those down, just to try to level it out the best I can. Hopefully I got all of the bits and did it the best I could. But I'm sure some of you will let me know. So just to note about that. That's all. But enjoy the podcast. Welcome back to Entertainment Talk. Today we're here to do the special big one for each year. This for 2025. This is the best and worst of TV, video game, films, and maybe some other stuff for 2025. I'm your host, Matthew, and joining me today, I have two co-hosts. Gray is with me today. How are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. It's good to be back. It feels like a long while.
Yes, I suppose so, yeah. And David, of course, is here as well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
Good, good. So we've all made our important choices, the ones that we spent hours on, I suppose, the ranking all the best TV, games, films, other stuff, and other selections, and things like that. I'm going to put a twist in here, because I usually go first with my other selections, but I'm going to change it this time. Let's go to Gray first. So other than your, you know, best list for TV, game, and films, what do you have for your other selections for 2025?
Oh, so good. I'm ready. I've got my list ready. So what I decided to do today is I wanted to talk about some actors and actresses who've had good years, and then I've got some celebrities who I think are just riding high on a lot of successes. And when I was trying to do like my worst programs, there's only one I could really sort of single out, and it's been cancelled. So I've got one worst, and all the rest are in my bests. So first I'll do the actors. I feel I've got four people on my list today, and these people I think have had a really good year, and will continue to roll over into the next year to have a fantastic time. So my first one is Seth Rogen, for obvious reasons, with his work on The Studio in particular. And he also had his second season of Platonic, and he's just riding high, I think, on a lot of success, and I've really enjoyed watching him this year. He's got quite a certain taste to him as an actor, but I've really enjoyed, he sort of found his place in these last couple of programs I've watched. The incredibly talented young Owen Cooper, the star of Adolescence, who obviously won an award this year, and also was then seen a little bit later in Film Club. Thought he's had a fantastic year. I think it's going to grow, keep on growing, and be continuously successful, and I just hope that it doesn't all end in a couple of years and he's just an old child actor. And then a little bit of a double act, Russell Tovey and Marwan Rizwan. They appeared in the sitcom Juice together, but then Russell's gone on to have even further success in his latest Doctor Who spin-off, Between the Land and the Sea, which has just recently landed. I'm a huge fan of Russell anyway, but I think he brings a lot of gravitas and skill to this role. And I think Marwan is such a talented comedy writer, trying new things. He's part of this little family empire with the other Rizwan, his brother, who is in Film Club. But I think he stands out, and I've really acknowledged him as an actor since he was on Taskmaster a few seasons ago. Just thought he was really, really, really talented. So those are my four actors. Can I move on to my actresses now? Anybody want to comment on my actors?
Yeah, that's the guy from Adolescence. Didn't expect you to say Seth Rogen, but I suppose he's done some good work as well. I never got around to seeing the Studio, but I did hear very good things about it. Very good.
Yeah, no, I like Seth. He's doing a really good job. And you've got to bear in mind as well, he's also exec producing The Boys and Gen Z. On top of everything else that he's doing, so as well as being on screen. So, you know, he is having an extremely good year, both in front of and behind the camera, which is fantastic. And I entirely agree on Owen. I mean, he was absolutely outstanding. You know, really deserved the award he got for that. So, yeah.
Excellent. Actresses, I've only got three. And I just think with these actresses, they're also amazing in interviews when I've seen them. So they seem to be really lovely, approachable, really caring about their craft and the fans. So my three actresses for 2025 is the amazing Amy Lou Wood, who is in Film Club, but also was seen in Daddy Issues, also seen in The White Lotus, had a fantastic year. And she was recently on Graham Norton, and she was just so funny, so warm. I know she had a bit of a tough time with a sketch from SNL, but I think she's dealt with it really well, risen above it. And I just think she's so talented. I really look forward to seeing what else she sort of brings to British television and international television over the next couple of years. Then I've got the incredible Cynthia Erivo. I've chosen her over her co-star in Wicked for Good. But again, I've just seen some stuff about her and her interview and her sort of giving back to her community, going back to her old school. And she has got a talent that sort of seeped through a lot more than just Wicked for Good. And I think one of her starring roles this year was on Poker Face, the opening episode of season two, where she played five or six versions of herself, which was really, really, really good. And then I'm just going to put Florence Pugh in there. I think she really held her own as the sort of the lead of Thunderbolts. And I think she, again, comes across really well in her interviews. And she's been doing a lot of press for some of her other stuff as well. And it's been, yeah, I think she's really talented. And I think she's potentially going to go very far in the next couple of years. So those are my three actresses. And do you have any comments on those before I go on to my celebs?
I love Florence Pugh. She's done, what else did she do? We Live in Time with Andrew Garfield, that's his name, yes.
Which was
really great as well.
Done a lot of promo for that as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But no, she's really become like a big, bigger star this year. So, and yeah, we'll be seeing her next year in Doomsday, won't we? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
All right, cool. What else do you have for like disappointments or best and worst?
So, I had one disappointment. So I also did a little mini list. I know it's not really both up your guys' streets, but this is like obviously a lot of stuff I do is on reality stuff. But I feel like there are four people who have absolutely blossomed this year based on their appearances, and I feel like their sort of selling power, their sort of commodity as a star, is really high at the moment. So first up, the amazing fringe that is Claudia Winkleman, from her success of The Traitors and Traitors Celebrity, and having that strength to be able to step down from Strictly, which she had been, you know, there for a lot of years. And that's a real, you know, sort of linchpin of the BBC schedule. But that is a real power that she can step down from that. And I think next year is going to be huge for her. The rumours that she's got her own chat show in the vein of Graham Norton coming about is really, really positive. And I think she'll be an absolutely amazing addition if she does get it. Accompanying her, I think the incredible Alan Carr's had a fantastic year. He already does so much. He has his show with Amanda Holden. He has Picture Slam, which is a ridiculously easy quiz, but it's so good. It works. He has Interior Design Masters. I listened to his travel podcast. He's now started a wine podcast. He's just got so much going for him, and he's got his sitcom as well. I mean, not forgetting that. So he's just going on the up, and I think Celebrity Chaters was just the perfect sort of, you know, cherry on top of the cake for him this year, and I really hope that does him well. We've just booked tickets for his tour in 2027, so we were really keen to make sure we saw him, and hope that he's still as funny in 18 months' time. Next up is Joe Marler. I think Celebrity Traitors has done brilliantly for him. He's really up in his celebrity profile, appearing in a lot of the standard quiz shows. So Joe Marler is this big rugby guy. He's actually from Sussex, from near where I am. He's got a real charm about him as well. He kind of says it as it is, and he does a lot of work for mental health and men's mental health, which is really good. He's kind of like encouraging people to talk and not bottle things up. So I think he is potentially going to go far. I've started subscribing to his new podcast, and he has some great relationships with actors like Nick Mohammed, and comedians like Joe Wilkinson, and I think that's really positive. And then my final celeb, who continues to do well, and I think she just brushes a lot of the negativity off, is the amazing Alison Hammond. She just has such an infectious laugh, such an infectious personality. She is the result of so many memes all over the internet, and I just think she's so warm and lovely. And I met someone recently who seen her and met her in real life, and we were like, oh, please tell us that she's as lovely in real life as she comes across in the screen. And she is as lovely in real life. They said she's just so warm and lovely, and she apparently did a pantomime, and she went into the sort of the backstage area where all the crew were based, and she went, this is your staff room, and they were like, yeah. She goes, this is horrendous. So she kitted out and redecorated their entire staff room, because she was like, it's not fair that you as the crew and the staff do not have decent facilities. So she paid for this complete refurbishment, and she said, there you go, my lovelies, I just want you to make sure you're in a lovely space. And that's kind of like the celebrity story you'd like to hear. So those are my four celebrities. I'm not sure any of you have many comments on those, because I don't think they're shows you guys watch, but have you heard of them all?
Yeah. I mean, I'm aware of all the people, and yeah. I mean, Alan Carr's been very funny about the fact that he is kind of milking the traitors thing as much as he can, which I think is very funny. But yeah, I mean, he's had a phenomenal year. Just as you say, the amount of things that he's involved in has been quite incredible. So
nice. Yeah, I like a few of those as well. I catch some of the picture. Quiz show now and again, which I quite like, actually. So
it's so simple. Who would have thought such a simple quiz on in the background? And me and my partner are like, oh my god, some of these people are so silly, they're so stupid, they can't. Anyway, it's great fun. So then my final sort of comment before I let you guys carry on is I've gone through all my shows that I've watched, and I know this year hasn't been a huge show, and I've rested on things I've watched before. But the one show I really struggled with, I got through to the end, I kind of hate watched it in the end, but was the program Countdown. So it was on Amazon Prime. It was this action thriller, and it was so much potential, but so wasted, I felt, with its choppy plots. Like, get to episode 9 and you think everything's wrapped up, and then you realize there's more episodes after. Huge stars, so much exposition in telling you like how much is going on, and I just thought it was really messy and tired, and I don't know what they were trying to achieve, and I went into it with a lot of hope, and I think I came out of it so disappointed. They had the most ridiculous cliffhanger to be cancelled as well, and it's just kind of like, you know, you shouldn't have filmed that cliffhanger until you knew you had a second season in the bag. I think you were too confident that we would love all this explosions and running and, you know, these big characters. But it was one of my most disappointing, and I really struggled. It took me so long to get through it. It just sat on my Amazon Prime for so long, and I was like, oh, I've got to finish it. And so, yeah, but that's my... And normally I can give you about 5 or 6 in this list. I know in the previous years I've sat here and done 5 or 6 disappointments. But I think I've been really... discipline this year, that if I don't like something or the early reviews are not what I want, I do not start it, and therefore it doesn't become an issue. And I think this time I minimized it down to 1. So yeah, that's my worst list.
All right, cool. I probably should go through my one next. Gonna start off with an interesting choice here. I've gone with worst film to start off with, and It was interesting with disappointing and worst films for me as we went through the year. You know, went to cinema, kept going to cinema, kept watching films from home. Then, you know, one after another, kept reviewing films. And, you know, some big ones came along, especially the ones in July. And it got to about August or September, and I realised I haven't disliked a single film I've watched, which has never happened to me before, maybe. And then I thought, oh, you know, it's only sort of, you know, August, September, whatever it was. There's still plenty of time in the year. Not that I was like, oh, give me one that I don't like so that it can be on the list, because that's kind of a silly way to go about things. And there were some films I, you know, avoided that I wasn't going to be looking forward to, like Until Dawn or Minecraft, those sorts of things. But never actually saw those, so can't put those on my worst list. And then, well, obviously with doing this now, and we've wrapped up with watching films for the year, and realised that I didn't give a possible skip or lower rating to any film this year. So for my worst film, I've not chosen anything because I sort of can't. I do have a most disappointing one because I thought, okay, if I put one that sort of I just about liked every film I saw this year, like a don't skip and above. But which of those, and you'll find out what I choose in a bit, as to sort of, okay, which one disappointed me the most. But yeah, for maybe the first time ever, I didn't see a single film that I disliked this year, which is nice, which is really nice. And there were some films I sort of missed and things like that, but I did see a good chunk of films. So yeah, so my choice is none. I do not have a worst film for 2025. Which is nice. Shifting gears to that, my biggest disappointment. So this is my biggest disappointment of the year overall. Now I'm going to switch to football for a second, but I'm going to try to keep this as short and swift as possible, because my biggest disappointment for 2025 is Manchester United Football Club. I have never seen this team do this badly before. And when we'll get to a record that I'll read out in a minute, we haven't been this bad for a very, very, very long time. Now, rather than me just kind of rabbiting about what happened, I just wrote down some highlights and some things I left out, because, again, it would be me talking too long about it. But this is just in case you wonder, okay, what was so disastrous about Man United within the last 12 months, let's say. So we let go of Erik ten Hag last year. Would be great if we kept him, because I'm sure he wouldn't have done worse than what this guy's doing. The current guy's called Ruben Amorim, in case some of you don't know. First mistake was our manager played a system which was 4-3-3. And for some reason, our board decided to go for a manager who was at Sporting Lisbon, who played a 3-4-3, which doesn't sound much different, but turns out it's very, very, very different and causes you to sort of restructure most of your team. We started slowly slipping down the table. The midfield kept getting exposed every week because we had two people in midfield and he refused to change it. As this was happening, fans were questioning, of course, what was going on. And it's been quoted multiple times saying, "I've got one way of playing, just one," which he's proved because he's never changed his formation once in the entire year. This can continue through the rest of the season while scraping some wins. The entire time during this period, failing to win back-to-back games for almost an entire year. Finished last season 15th place on 42 points, while Liverpool finished with double the amount of points on 84, equaling our title record of 20 titles. 42 points, by the way, is what like relegation teams try to get to. Then lost an FA Cup final to Spurs, because it was like, all right, okay, we're going to finish really, really low, but let's try and win this Europa League. Failed to do that. Of course, just failed to adapt in the cup final. Didn't change the formation again, etc., etc. This next one's quite a big one. I don't know how many of you are aware of this. At one point, I don't know what his win percentage record is now, but at one point, he gained the lowest win percentage of a Manchester United manager since World War II. Which wow. was a very long time ago. You're talking very, very much pre-Sir Alex Ferguson. I think it was like 25% or something. New season transitions in. The manager publicly calls out 10 players and was nicknamed the Bomb Squad, which caused us to devalue all of them and lose a bunch of money. The club then, as they do every year, moaned about a lack of funds to buy new players, while also saying, hey, we're going to build a new stadium and it's going to cost about $6 billion. Well, or £6 billion. Well, if you don't have loads of money to buy players, how are you going to build that? But we'll figure that out at some point in the future. Then the season just continued dragging on. Then we very poorly lost in a Carabao Cup game to Grimsby, which was genuinely quite hard to watch. Then lost at home 1-0 against a 10-man Everton team. And then most recently, last week, we let Wolves score their first goal in 5 games. Which was also painful to go through. There's loads of other stuff that happened. I've not even mentioned the academy and what he's done to that. But just very dreary to watch this continue to happen. And by the way, he's still employed by Manchester United Football Club. So, yeah, we'll see how this continues to go and where it goes from there. But that, I know there's a lot of information there, but that's basically a bit of a summary of things that happened. Let's move on from football to most disappointing game. I've got Baby Steps, Death Stranding 2, Little Nightmares 3, and Metal Gear Solid Delta. I think I'm going to go with Death Stranding 2, because with Baby Steps, it looked interesting, but just kind of was a bit of a dreary game. Death Stranding 2 was directed by Hideo Kojima, and just with that alone, I just think I expected a lot more. So for disappointing, I'm going to go with that. I know he did direct the original Metal Gear, but again, it was Konami, so there was kind of question marks about that. So that's what I'm going to go for, most disappointing game. Worst game, I've gone with the same selections. I think I've got to go with Little Nightmares 3. Again, I didn't expect as much from that game because I didn't hear so great things about it and that kind of stuff. Different developer, big mistake made there. But I'll try not to go into Little Nightmares 3 because I've talked about it a lot recently. I did a whole review. But just a very poor, kind of pathetically quiet, lack of atmospheric sort of game that was made. So worst game, I'm going to go with Little Nightmares 3. The most disappointing movie. Again, liked every film I saw in 2025, but I wanted to choose something for like most disappointing. I've gone with Superman. Again, I don't think it's terrible. I didn't dislike it. I just about liked it. That being said, when thinking about most disappointing film, it just could have maybe had a bit more to it. You know, just if we're being a bit, I guess, nitpicky and whatnot, I suppose. There was a lot about the film that surprisingly worked. I didn't think the war political storyline was going to work, but it actually fit in quite nicely, so that was surprising. Great cast, all that sort of thing, which was really great. But it just felt we could have just done a little bit more, so I've chose that for most disappointing. Most disappointing TV show and worst TV show. So I've chosen these same selections for both. Gen V Season 2, Twisted Metal Season 2, and Has-Been Hotel Season 2. I think for most disappointing, I'm going to go with Twisted Metal Season 2. It was between that and Gen V Season 2, but I think I expected more from Twisted Metal. Just because it had such a great first season, it had like nothing to work off of. I know a lot of these video game adaptions have got, you know, games with stories to work off of, but Twisted Metal really doesn't. Just some tonal shifts I think they missed in Season 2, some weird mishandlings of some character deaths and fake-out deaths, and it just didn't quite click in sort of the same way. For worst TV show, I'm kind of genuinely torn between Gen V Season 2 and Has-Been Hotel Season 2. They both were not great for different reasons. I think I might go for Gen V Season 2, actually, over Has-Been Hotel. Again, Gen V Season 1, it took me a couple of episodes to get into it and get, you know, into the kind of new characters and stuff. But I think once I got into into the second half of Season 1, things really started clicking and I ended up liking it more than the boys. And then I kind of wondered, okay, are we going to have like a sophomore slump for Season 2? And it's not just that, and it's not just I felt the overall quality wasn't as good as Season 1. It's also, without spoiling things, you spent an entire season building up a certain thing, revealed what that thing was to us, and then in the last episode got rid of that thing for the sake of just pushing a character forward, which is not a terrible idea, but the way you went about it and what the whole season looks like just sort of, I think you could have done that in less time as well. So and then Has-Been Hotel Season 2 just had the weird thing of repeating the same mistake as Season 1, but it was just a bit more erratic and busy, and I know some people pointed out like the weird animation from Season 2, and it was fine when it was doing good things, but it still hasn't oddly got to its actual concept two seasons in, which is really odd. So those are my TV choices, I suppose. Again, looked through, I didn't give a lot of things like possible skip or skip ratings for TV shows, and of course Gen V I covered weekly, so that was a bit different. My personal highlight of the year, got to put Beating Lies of Pete, which I did 2 weeks ago, which still feels great, still reflecting on that. For those of you that don't know, of course, that's the Pinocchio-esque game, the sort of Dark Tale version Pinocchio game, if you put Pinocchio into like a Dark Souls kind of setting. And I wasn't stuck on the last boss for 2 years, but I started the last boss 2 years ago and I've now beaten him, so make of that what you will. But I had to go back in the game and do New Game Plus, and they put like an easier mode in to help me go back through the game. And then finally just got a good run at the boss, got things right and threw the right stuff and got some of my parries and timings right, and eventually finally beat him. There's a podcast out for that if you want to hear more about that. But I can now watch actual videos of people doing it and know that, like, oh yeah, I've also done this now as well. So that's really nice. I've put what I'm going to call most improved. So this isn't sort of like best comeback necessarily, or these are for two shows that I don't think started off badly. They just got, I think, significantly better in their second seasons. Gone with Shrinking and Silo season 2. I think both of the first seasons of these shows didn't completely click with me in the way that they seemed to with other people, especially Silo. Like, I remember finishing Silo season 1 and thinking, okay, that was really, really good, and there was everybody kind of around me really praising it, but then I just felt like it just really improved in season 2, and did a bit of a different thing for Shrinking, but I felt like that improved a lot as well in season 2, and just, I don't know, some better writing, some better storylines. I don't necessarily have a winner out of those two, but maybe Shrinking, I'd go with the winner for most improved there. Let's go with the moment of the year that I've chosen, which is the Lionesses winning back-to-back Euros. So they won the first one in 2022, I think it was, then lost the World Cup final a couple of years later, and then came roaring back this year and beat, I think it was Spain in the final, wasn't it? Beat Spain in the final, Chloe Kelly's penalty. Laura Hampton, I think the name was, goalkeeper, Hannah Hampton, something like that. Did really, really well in the finals, the goalkeeper. And, again, great to see England winning stuff, because the men haven't done it since 66. So, it was really, really great to see that. I love what the manager's doing over there with the team as well. Somebody who does change their formation, because that's what most managers do. But that was really, really great to see, and I can't wait to see what they do at the next tournament as well. Wanted to point out as well some big anniversaries. I don't really have a winner here per se, but there were some big anniversaries I felt this year, and also some big upcoming ones for next year. So The Last of Us turned 12. That's the original 2013 PlayStation 3 game from Naughty Dog. Last of Us 2 turned 5. Naughty Dog technically turned 40. This was pre-PlayStation when they put out their games before PlayStation. Pixar turning 30, technically post Toy Story 1, and of course the big one there, Toy Story 1 itself turning 30, which I thought was just lovely. Three big anniversaries coming up next year, unless there's some ones that I don't know about. Crash Bandicoot and Naughty Dog post PlayStation will be turning 30, so 1996. And Entertainment Talk, the place that you're listening to right now, will be turning 10 years old on April 6, 2016. We will be around for 10 years when that comes around next year. It's going off of some of Gray's stuff for performers. I've just put them all just in one list and from different stuff, but I do have a winner in mind. So I've gone from for Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin from Daredevil, Pedro Pascal as Joel Miller from The Last of Us, Sophie Thatcher as young Natalie from Yellowjackets, Bella Ramsey as Ellie Williams from The Last of Us, Lauren Ambrose as Van in Yellowjackets, Caitlin Dever as Abby Anderson in The Last of Us, Florence Pugh as Yelena in Thunderbolts, David Harbour as Red Garden in Thunderbolts, Sami Henrati, young Misty from Yellowjackets, Jennifer English as Mael, Expedition 33, Rebecca Ferguson is Juliet Nichols in Silo. But the winner is, I'm going to go with Owen Cooper as Jamie Miller for Adolescence, who I thought was, like you said, great, absolutely incredible in his role. Still, what, like 15 or something he is, and it was his first like major TV role. And I think just alone, there's kind of two elements to that, right? First of all, the actual performance that he gave and the whole one-shot aspect, and, you know, I guess if you muck up like a one-shot episode, you have to do the whole thing again, I guess. So there's that kind of element, and then, like, you know, he's playing the main character, there's a lot going on with that main character because of what the storyline's about and that sort of thing. But then also, just, he is so young. There's obviously millions of eyes on Adolescence. A lot of people talked about it. But that also just being his first acting job, I just thought was just really, really incredible. It was interesting. A good thing you brought him up first, actually, because I went to look up his name on Google, and it's got like a completely different name listed. So, yeah, managed to change it to what it actually is, which is Owen Cooper. It had some sort of different name on Google's casting list, which is weird. So, But I deleted that in my document. But yeah, Owen Cooper as Jamie Miller in Adolescence. Let's continue here. I've got the one I missed. So this is something I introduced last year. It's sort of, if I didn't catch a season or a game or something like that, and something that really, really stood out that I completed the next year, to put that in here. Absolutely going to go with The Substance, which is, of course, Demi Moore. I think Dennis Quaid is his name, and Margot Qualley. I'm literally not going to describe the film, because it's genuinely something you should watch without knowing anything. I would still say the second best film I've ever seen, of course, behind any of the Toy Story films in the number one slot. But just from top to bottom, the story, what the story is about, the filmmaking quality, even those sorts of things on their own, like the camera work, the audio, the script, all the different shots that are in this film and sort of what the shots kind of represent. It's not just sort of, you know, generic kind of camera work. I was completely blown away by this film when I saw it, and generally one that I would label as an experience other than, you know, just another really, really great film. I can't recommend that highly enough. I think you can go and find it on certain streaming things for VOD and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, absolutely loved it. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. Let's go with best scene. I've got The Talk, which is Adolescence Episode 3. Abby Meets the Infected and Goes Past the Fence, The Last of Us Episode 2. The Handling of an Exit, 911. Hopefully you all know what I mean by that. Coach is the Bridge, Yellow Jackets. Abby Plays Golf with Joel, The Last of Us. Yelena's Dad Arrives to Pick Her Up, Thunderbolts. For Those Who Come After, Expedition 33. The ending scene of South of Midnight, and the porch scene from Episode 6 of The Last of Us. And I just can't look past it. It's got to be the porch scene from The Last of Us Episode 6. I talked about this when we reviewed the episode, of course, me and David, when we did that. I've got a lot, you know, I've got emotional a lot of scenes over the years from a lot of different things. There's only two scenes in my entire life that I've seen that have genuinely made me kind of ball out, if you want to call it that, which is the opening of Toy Story 2 when Buzz Lightyear fake dies, and when Joel and Ellie are talking on this porch. You could technically say 3, because I still had the same reaction when I played the game. But that was like 5 years ago. So same scene, just different sort of version. But just what that scene means, that scene is sort of the culmination of the story of, you know, these two and the whole infection and cure and Joel's stance on it, and obviously the whole Sarah angle. Neil doing an incredible job writing and directing, I think, both versions of that. Hallie writing it in there as well. It's just a really, really, really incredible scene. Then the close second I would probably put is The Talk from Adolescence Episode 3. But I know that's kind of like that whole episode, basically, but still really kind of stands out. So, but yeah, a lot of really, really incredible scenes. Gone with, and this is my last bit, best line. I've gone with, says a few nominations, The Handmaid's Tale, Blessed is the woman who does not walk in stride with the wicked. Just thought that really, really stood out, and like what that means for what these characters have been through. I just thought that was really, really incredible. South of Midnight with the other one. You have no idea what loss feels like, which is near the end of the game. Just because of how well it fits, I think I might go with The Handmaid's Tale line there, but I really, really like the line from South of Midnight. And then my actual last one is best episode, Last of Us Season 2 Episode 6 and Adolescence Episode 3. And yet again, I think I've got to go with The Last of Us Season 2 Episode 6. Sorry, Adolescence. It's just, you know, did an incredible job. And I picked their actor for best actor, so they get that from me, I suppose. I know I didn't really kind of stop. I had a lot of things to go through there, so I didn't really kind of ask the two of you any surprises, any sort of thoughts on a lot of my selections there.
Great. I don't have a lot of comments on games, obviously, but I'm glad to hear that Owen Cooper's up there for you as well. I just think there's a real talent that came through, really well developed. And obviously, I knew you'd have an honorary mention for Last of Us Season 2. Even though it wasn't as good as Season 1, I think there were some really beautiful scenes in there. I think Episode 2, well, end of Episode 1 onwards, really rocked the boat for a lot of fans, so it didn't get as much press coverage. But if you continue to watch, there were some really surprising and great bits of acting in there as well. But it's really weird, isn't it, when I don't even play the game, but I knew what was coming. And a lot of people reacted to that, even though it was quite out there. It wasn't exactly a spoiler. So anyway, that's just sort of my thoughts. But yeah, I'm sorry to hear about Man United, Matt. I really am.
It's not your fault. I'm sure you know how to change formation. So yeah. David, any thoughts at all?
No, I mean, I absolutely agree on Owen Cooper. I think he was phenomenal in that role and, you know, deserves every award that they've thrown at him. I think he's been absolutely brilliant. Some other interesting choices in there. I rate Superman, I think, higher than you do. So,
yeah, I think so.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I haven't watched many movies this year either. So, yeah, on the gaming front, I've played very different types of games usually, me and you. So, mm-hmm. So yes, right, that's going to be interesting when we come to those lists.
Yeah, certainly. David, what are your other, I guess, selections for 2025?
Well, for 2025, I don't really have TV shows that I was, you know, hated. Because I like Grey, if it's something that I don't think I'm going to like, I tend not to sort of pick it up in the first place. There have been a couple that I kind of want to go back to and try again. One of them being Alien Earth, which I really struggled with. And I think, I don't know whether it was just I wasn't in the right headspace, but I really, really struggled with that. And I need to go back and see if I can try that. So I think that was slightly disappointing that it didn't grip me as much as it probably should have done. I think we've got to throw a mention for something that hasn't been mentioned at all here, which is All's Fair. Because that show absolutely savaged by the critics, but it seems to have been watched by everybody. And I mean, I got about halfway through one episode and it's dreadful. I mean, it really is dreadful, but oddly compelling. And so I may go back and watch some more of it when I'm on a flight soon. Maybe I'll go and watch it on the flight because it sounds it's something that I think, you know, could wash over you on a flight. So, you know, maybe I'll go and do that. So I mean, in terms of disappointing for TV, I would say that there. I haven't got any disappointing films because I really haven't watched that many films this year. So the ones I've gone to see are what films that I really wanted to see. Couple of disappointments in gaming. Civilization 7, I think, will be one it's fine, but they made some major changes to the previous game, and I've not really felt drawn back into it as much as I have with previous Civilization games. So I think, you know, it might be one of those that if I leave it for 12 months or so and then pick it back up again, I might feel differently about it. But I don't think it quite found where it needed to be. So that would be one of them. The other one is Surviving Mars Relaunched, which on paper, what it was supposed to do was take the original Surviving Mars, fix all the problems, because they got to a point where there were issues with it, with the original game, and they couldn't fix them because of the way it was coded. So the idea was they were going to release it at a cheaper price point for people who had the original and have a sort of relaunch of it with all the bugs fixed. And they relaunched it, and half the bugs that were in the original game were still in this version, which entirely negates the point of doing it in the first place. They have been fairly active in trying to nail those down, but you do think, if you know, the first thing you should have done is gone through it with a fine-tooth comb to make sure the bugs that people complained about very loudly in the first game are not in this relaunched version. So and I mean, and on top of that, there is the sort of entire thing of it's basically the same game, it's just got a few more bits and tweaks and additions and DLC like all built into it, but it's also brought some of the bugs across with it as well, and that was the entire point of doing it. So yeah, I think that has been really annoying. Also, a shout out to Cities Skylines 2 in terms of disappointments, because although that was released a couple of years ago, you know, it is obviously an ongoing game. And it got to the point where they've actually fired Colossal Order, the people that were behind it. It's produced by Paradox, made by Colossal Order. Colossal Order at the end of this year will get kicked off their own product, and they brought a new development team in. It's gone that badly. And considering how brilliant the first City Skylines was, the fact that it's got to that point with City Skylines 2 is really not a great sign. The modders are doing a sterling job in improving things in that game, but it's slightly sad that you're in a position where you're relying on mods to fix things which should be working fine in the original game. So, yeah, there's that as well. So those would be my sort of disappointments in terms of gaming. I've not done sort of best actors or best actresses or anything like that. So that's pretty much me, I think.
All right, cool. So I think what we have next is our list. I will record this next section later. Gray's moving around. We could take a break here, come back, and I think we'll tackle video games first, just so we can kind of, for Gray, get that out of the way, and then do maybe films, and then best TV shows. So we'll take a break, come back in a minute, do some housekeeping, but I'll record that after, and we'll see you for that in a minute. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Hey everybody, just to take a break away from the podcast to do the housekeeping section here. So recently on Entertainment Talk, as I'll be mentioning on the podcast, recently started the rankings podcast for the Pixar films, all 29 of Pixar's films. The first episode is numbers 29 to 26 because, of course, they don't have 30 films yet. And then the next 5 episodes will be for the next 5 slots for each one, leading up all the way to number one. But the first episode you can listen to so you can find out what I think is Pixar's worst film in slot number 29 all the way up to slot number 26. Those will be 2 p.m. every Wednesday for the next, I guess, 5 weeks. Over on the United cast, of course, we did manage to get past Wolves. They opened themselves up, etc., etc. We did beat them 4-1. We will be playing, of course, on Monday against Bournemouth at home, so we'll see how that goes. Over on some possible skip reviews, Has Been Hotel Season 2 gave a possible skip rating to that. Also over in the United cast, of course, we drew 1-1 with West Ham. Disappointing result there. Concluding certain things, Breaking Bad, we've concluded with Season 4, Episode 13 called Face Off. Of course, that's not going to be in this podcast because that season is from, I think, 2012. So a little bit too old for the 2025 podcast. But that's concluding that. We're hoping to come back next year with Breaking Bad Season 5. We'll see what happens. Over on some other stuff, did an episode called Overcoming Liza P and Myself. Got a very long journey with this game. a very long story with the game, of overcoming the sort of mental challenge of it and all that. So you can go and listen to my Overcoming Liza P and myself podcast. Liza P is a video game, in case some of you don't know. Over on Gaming Talk from 2 weeks ago, we talked about a special announcement, Rosie leaving PlayStation Access, and some social media reviews. We will be back, this Tuesday to wrap up for the year with, of course, talking about the Game Awards, so we'll see for that. Over on some video game reviews, did a skip rating review for Little Nightmares 3, sorry, hard skip rating review for Little Nightmares 3, so talked all about that. Did a must play review for Keeper. This is a new game from Double Fine where you play as a lighthouse. Very, very good. And that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. I think this is the point in the episode where we are about to go into our actual lists. Anyway, I'll hand you back to my past self, or everybody's past self. But thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. See you next time. All right, back with the second half of the podcast. Let's go to video games first. David, how many selections do you have?
I've got 7.
Okay, I shall let you go first then, because your list is longer. So what are your 7 best games of 2025?
Okay, at number 7, I've got a game which is technically still in early access, but I really, really enjoyed it, so I wanted to add it to the list. It's called Hollywood Animal, and you're basically running a movie studio. It's not like the movies, which is the game that everybody wants to be remade and nobody's had the guts to actually try and do it. But it is quite good in terms of sort of setting up a Hollywood studio. You go through time as well. In the version that we got, it sort of takes you from the early days of the movie, so it takes you from kind of 1930s up until 1920s 1930s up until the 40s, I think it is. It's just really fun. It's really nicely put together. It's got a beautiful graphic style to it. I just really, really enjoy playing through that game. So that is out on early access. I'm looking forward to the full release of that. There is a game at 6 called News Tower, which is basically what it sounds like. It's a tower where you can run a newspaper. And again, it's got a sort of 1920s, 1930s kind of vibe to it. The idea is that you start off with your sort of base and you're trying to expand out throughout, I think it's New York it's set in, and you're trying to sort of expand out across the city, and you take over zones and districts as you sort of hit various different targets. Really, really enjoyed that. It's really good fun. Ale Abbey is at number 5. That is a game where you play as a bunch of monks that are in an abbey and they make beer, and you come up with various different recipes. There are sort of sliders, and depending what ingredients you add to the recipes, it makes various different types of ale. So you've got to sort of work out what recipes work best. There are certain targets you have to hit for some things, like some people want particularly frothy beer, so you've got to kind of add more stuff in particularly for that order. So it's just really fun. It's got a lovely style to it as well. It's a sort of pixel graphic side-scrolling kind of thing, a bit like Oxygen Not Included, that sort of thing, but it's a pixel graphics thing instead, or Terrania, something like that. But I really like that game. It was really wonderful fun. So I've been playing through that. That's had a full release this year. Counter City is at number 4. This is a really cozy little city builder. It's beautiful in the graphic style. Again, it's a sort of 3D pixel art, this one. So it is pixel art, but it is also 3D. And you can just build these cute, beautiful little towns. And it's a really interesting approach to a city builder. You are plonking down individual buildings, and you can build little neighborhoods. There are lots of different maps you can play on. I think they've added a winter expansion which had snow and Christmas decorations and stuff. But it's a really chill, really nice little city builder, that. And that's Counter City. Really enjoyed that. So for my top 3, Jurassic World Evolution 3, which is at number 3, which I really enjoyed. I loved the last two games, but it was always slightly frustrating in that you didn't have full control over the stuff that you could build in there. Unlike some of the other games from that studio, like the Planet Zoo and Planet Coaster games, where you could build, you could basically take individual sort of walls and stuff and actually build very specific kind of, you know, shops and stuff. You never had that with Jurassic World, and they've now added that system into the third game. So you've got people coming onto the workshop creating these wonderful, interesting like layouts and stuff. It's a real nice step in the right direction for that game. Of course, it's basically you managing a dinosaur park and trying not to have all the dinosaurs escape and eat all the people that are coming to visit them. So it's basically an evolution of the first and second game, and it sort of molds it into a bit more of the kind of Planet Zoo kind of setup, but with dinosaurs. And I really, really like that. It's a really nice game. That's been really enjoyable. At number two, I've got Anno 117, which is the new version of Anno set in Rome. Solid step in the right direction for that game. It was always going to be quite difficult when you're following something like Anno 1800, which is enormous and just the pinnacle of their Anno games so far. It's absolutely superb. The Anno games are, again, another city builder. They're one of the things that I play most. 1800 has had millions and millions of bits of DLC for it over the years, so it is a huge, massive game. 117 has only just started, so there is much less to actually play with at the moment, but it will grow over time. They've already announced a number of things that they're doing with expansions, and it will be one of those things that every time they release an expansion, I will be diving back into it. They've just refined some of the systems a little bit. They've added ground combat back in, which they took out in 1800. There's also seafaring combat. The Rome setting is really nice. I will be very interested to see where that game is in 12 months, because I think it's a solid starting base for that.
Just remember with number one, I forgot to mention this because we're all supposed to guess, aren't we? What everybody has got.
Yes.
What would your number one be? I don't know what's on Gray's mind, what he thinks.
Gray won't have a clue. So.
I will not have the foggiest.
Because I was going to think it might be the Anno game that you just mentioned.
Yes.
What was that? It's probably a building game. Because I usually recall the Civilization games are well-received, but you put that in like most disappointing. So it's not going to be that. Is it one of the, like, the Subnautica games?
No, because they've not had one out this year.
Okay.
And there's all sorts of drama going on behind the scenes with Subnautica at the moment as well. Okay. Sacking devs and all sorts of things, so yes.
No, I don't have another guess. What is your number one?
My number one game is called The Altars.
That was the other one, yeah.
Which is a lovely mix of, there is some base building in there. It's not a city builder. It has got some base building in it. But this was a beautifully wonderful, strange idea. You are dropped onto this planet, and there is supposed to be a team of you that are doing a mining operation on this planet. And something goes wrong. The ship crashes. You end up on this planet by yourself. And there is a system within the ship that allows you to duplicate yourself, but with different timelines. So at some point in your life, you may have, rather than becoming a miner, you may have ended up becoming a doctor or an artist. Or so what you can do is use this machine to duplicate other versions of yourself. So you end up in a ship that is crewed by different versions of the same character. It's such a wonderfully strange idea. The plot is really well written. There are some interesting moral dilemmas in it. I played it through from start to finish. Really, really, really enjoyed it. I think it's a really fascinating, well put together game. It's from a company called 11-Bit Studios. definitely one worth picking up, called The Altars. That has been my game of the year, I think, for this year.
Nice, cool. I've got five selections. I actually think my number one for each three things is quite, I feel like they're quite obvious, but we'll see when you guys get to the guessing game. Number five for me, because I didn't actually finish that many games this year, but yeah, these are the five that I played, and some of them you can't finish, I guess, that ended up on my top five. And number five, I'm going to go with Rematch, which is the new football game, kind of the arcadey one, a bit FIFA Street-esque, a bit sort of Rocket League-esque, and puts a small dent in the competition of EA FC games, even though it's a little bit different. So this is from Slow Clap, which is the developers of Sifu, which was the fighting game from a couple of years ago. And it is a third person with like a reticle kind of thing, football game. You play in this little Rocket League style arena. You can do, I think, from 3v3 to 5v5, so you can do, you know, 4v4 as well. And there's like interesting different mechanics, different ways to control the ball. People can kind of like, you know, call for a pass or say, you know, sorry if they mess up, if they want to say sorry. And then say like, you know, we've got this and good job. So it's that kind of, it's not got emotes in that way, but you can do like call outs and stuff, even though you can do voice chat as well. Can be really, really intense. Can be certainly intense when it's like 5v5 and you actually get the ball passed to you and you're sort of, you know, looking for your options and stuff, which is great. So it's got a very, very, very good idea behind it, and I really, really do like it a lot. It does, unfortunately, have the issue of people don't kind of pass enough, and people try to go too much for glory, and they see, you know, the stars in their eyes, and they go for a ridiculous shot. That's not really the game's fault, that's just, you know, a bit of an issue with it. But you can do some, like, interesting moves and things. I really like the sort of difference here in the mechanics and stuff. I think it's once you get kind of a handle on it, because there is a bit to learn, it is very different to something like FIFA, because, you know, PES has turned into this weird card game thing, whatever that is, and there's really not much other sort of competition in the football space. So it was good to see a Rematch come along, and I guess you wouldn't have thought of a fighting game studio coming out with a football game, but there we go. So that's been really, really good. Number four, I'm going to put Dispatch, which is from, I think, called Ad Hoc Studios, and former Telltale developers, and in collaboration with Critical Role. So you've got a bit of Ashley Johnson, you've got a lot of Laura Bailey, there's people like Matt Mercer in there as well, playing some big roles. Got a lot of other voice talent. You've got like Aaron Paul, who plays the main character. Jeffrey Wright is in there. You've got some YouTube people. Moist Critical's in there. You've got Jacksepticeye, Alana Pierce is in there as different voices. You've also got just a bunch of really, really talented people, but Aaron Paul's the main character. So basically sort of a choice-based Telltale-esque game, apart from in this you don't like walk around. Like in the old Telltale games, you'd walk around and you'd figure things out and do puzzles. This is just kind of, you have a few quick time event bits for some different combat stuff. You have like a hacking kind of mini game. You have the dispatch mini game. The choices that you make, of course, you know, which will lead to certain things. And then your general dialogue choices. So slightly different to a Telltale game, but still sort of similar format. Might be getting a second season. That would be interesting to see. I had a couple of issues with the dispatch game itself and the like hacking mini game that you do, but still really, really enjoyed it overall. It's much more just about the characters and their relationships, their dynamics, and of course what you choose to do causing the different story outcomes. I think there's three different endings that you can get, so I very much enjoyed that. Number three, I'm going to go with Keeper, which is Double Fine's newest game, which has gone a tiny bit under the radar this year. But you play as a lighthouse and you get a bird companion. The bird sits on top of your head while he points at things. You can tell the bird to like go to different things, you just different mechanics. You've got your actual light itself, which you can sort of use to activate various platforms and stuff, and for the most part you walk through, you solve puzzles, you get told bits of story. It is a completely dialogueless game. There's no dialogue in the game at all. It's more about kind of just exploring the world that you're in, finding out what happened, a little bit of environmental storytelling, but it also does sort of like it's storytelling through emotions. Like you can tell when you go into different areas and sort of these little characters that you meet as to how they're sort of feeling about stuff, and it does that in a really, really great way. You don't really see that that much in certain games. So thoroughly enjoyed that. Number two, I'm going to go with South of Midnight, which is another Xbox game. You can get through Game Pass and whatnot. This is Hazel's story as she goes kind of through that. She goes to try and save her mum. Really enjoyed this game in terms of like the traversal and the combat to be really engaging and to be really well done. I really enjoyed the story and the characters. Some like really tragic things that happened in this game, but sort of done quite well through the game. And I know some people weren't a fan of it, but with Forspoken from a couple of years ago, kind of reminded me of that. It's got nothing to do with Forspoken, totally different thing, but kind of reminded me of that game as well. And it seems that the people that did play it did really enjoy it, but one of them that just went under the radar a little bit. I wonder if that's just an Xbox problem or something. I don't know. But that was from Compulsion Games, which I think was a Bethesda studio at one point. But yeah, they made that, so really great. Comes with that line as well that I mentioned, which I enjoyed from later on in the game. But it's not my game of the year. What do you, I guess, you both think is my number one game for 2025?
Great, I suspect you have no idea.
I have no idea. Do you know what? When we did our recent Geek Town doing the shortlist, I was like, maybe I should remember some of these because then I could have a guess because I remember you might be passionate about them. Do you think I remember any of them? Or I even listened back to the podcast the other day and I still didn't take any of the notice about what you were saying about the games. So I'm afraid I cannot guess.
Expedition 33.
Okay, great. Anything at all?
Super Mario Kart. That's the extent
there is
of my
Super
gaming.
Mario Kart game this year, I think,
yes,
actually.
There, so. Was, there you go.
Well, David is correct. My game of the year for 2025 by a fairly clear margin, although I did really love South of Midnight, is Expedition 33. And as you saw at the Game Awards, what was it, last week, absolutely cleaned up. They just kept going on the stage every 5 minutes, it felt like, and just claiming all the awards, as well as Jennifer English as well for Mayal. She won an award as well, who of course I put in my list. I think this is one of the best games of the generation. Not that I think this generation's been massively strong, but that's maybe a different topic for a different time. Yeah, this game just absolutely sweeped loads of awards this year, and it's interesting because I actually got to this game late, and on our Gaming Talk podcast, Robert was bringing it up because he was playing it at the time because it was on Game Pass and whatnot, and he just kept praising it every week, and just in and around, I think, April was when it came out, and I just kept hearing endless praise about this game, and it was never a case of didn't want to play it, wasn't interested, whatever. I think I was doing my Naughty Dog project at the time, which was playing all of their PlayStation games. And I was like, okay, sounds like really excellent. We'll see like how good it is when I play it. And I remember one of the last shows when Robert finished the game, and he's like, oh, I hope I haven't like oversold it or anything else like that. And I remember then I started, you know, actually playing it and went on my journey with it. And he kept kind of saying in the first couple of weeks, because obviously it took me a bit of time to finish it, and he was like, oh, I'm glad that I didn't sort of oversell it. And I told him in the end, I think you somehow undersold this game to me in a strange way. It's this is, yeah, Expedition 33, so it's from Sandfall. I think it's I don't know if it's 20 or if there is more people than that. I think there's more people than that, but from an indie team. It's weird because you look at a massive game like this and you don't think, oh yeah, it's an indie game, because it just looks so massive. Telling the story of Expedition 33, can't really get into too much of what the story is and stuff because of spoilers and things, but fantastic combat system, really engaging characters, particularly Mayal herself really stands out. You got some other talented voice cast. You got Jennifer English, you got Ben Starr, Andy Serkis is in this game as well. You've got what was her name? Yeah, some other really big names in the game as well, some fantastic characters. One of the most satisfying parry slash counter systems I've seen in a game. It will essentially have, like I said, it's a turn-based game, and where it kind of gets more chaotic and interesting is where you sort of come across these like massive characters, and when they're like really slamming down these massive attacks on you, but you're actually getting a timing right, and there's like a really great sort of sound cue bit to that, and it's sort of, sometimes you have to parry 5 attacks, but then you'll do a counter and your character will like spin through the air and it looked really cool, and you do like a big counter with a, maybe with an element. There's also ones where The enemies attacking like your whole expedition, which is three characters. You parry that, you counter that, all three of the characters jump up and do like a counter. It's really spectacular. I meant to put as well for best music, I would go with Expedition 33 for that, for like best music of the year. Got a bunch of songs from this game bought and, you know, purchased on my phone that I listened to at various different points. Music's phenomenal. It was great to see that at the you know, orchestral performance at the Game Awards. And it's also just like a really, really rewarding combat system. Like when you actually sort of, you know, you mark an enemy, then you set them on fire, then you do this and you do that and you sort of combine different things. Usually ends with Mael on the right side doing some sort of big virtuoso stance attack. And like the world's really interesting as well. And this is the first of maybe two games ever where, because as many of you know, I'm not a visual person. I'm not like a graphics person. It's probably the thing I care least about when I go to play a video game. But this game made me sort of like stop and look around in it. And I don't do that in video games. The last one I probably did do that in was Last of Us 2 in terms of, you know, like the environmental storytelling and stuff. But because of how like previous expeditions and things go, you'll see sort of like, it won't make much sense me describing it here, but you'll see like a Ferris wheel in the distance and like a boat. And you'll think like, okay, someone was maybe on that boat at some point, or someone was on that Ferris wheel at some point. How did it end up over there, kind of thing? And then there's like underwater levels that you can walk through, which is like really, really cool and stuff. So in terms of visuals as well, this game really did something different to me, because again, I don't look around in video games. I'm not a sort of like photo mode person or anything else like that, but just absolutely highly recommend it. I think it's on Game Pass. I think it's on sale as well on different stores. So yeah, congratulations to Samfall for Expedition 33. Let's move on to, I think it usually works if we save TV for last and films is next in my list. And Grey is of course our big sort of films person. So I'll hand it over to you, Grey. What are your best films for 2025?
Don't sell me too much. it's not been a great year for films, and I actually think the cinema has had a bit of a dip in some of the big blockbusters. I know there's a big call to try and get it back on track a little bit next year. There are some big ones in, but we have had a fair few films released. I've got mine down to five for different reasons, really, for some of the things they've been doing for their particular genre that they're in. So I will give you my five through to two, and then let you guys guess where you think my number one is. So in at number five, a little slow burner that everyone was talking about. It was released onto Netflix, and in actual fact, it's done so well that they now have regrets about not merchandising it better before they released it. And that is K-pop Demon Hunters. Gonna put that in there because I thought it did a brilliant job. It got a lot of young people engaged, adults engaged, different, out of the, you know, not normal in terms of what we expect for a cartoon or a children's movie, and actually really accessible, really fun, really good music. And I know there's going to be more, and this time they're going to pull their fingers out. We're all going to be able to dress up as each of them. So that's my number five. In at number four, a very long, but a goodbye to Mission Impossible. And I enjoyed this. I know I went with my friend and he did not enjoy it at all. Couldn't wait to get out of the cinema, but I actually thought it was a fitting ending. Used some great cliches of the action genre. It had some brilliant performances in there, some goodbyes to some of our old and favorites. And in actual fact, I thought it did a really good job for the final movie in the entire franchise. Please edit this if in 2028 he decides to come back and do another one at the ripe old age of, you know, late 60s by then. But, you know, I think it was a good film, and that's my number four. My number three, I saw it just a couple of weeks ago, and I re-sang the entire soundtrack the other day as well. I think Wicked for Good, bringing in my love for Cynthia Erivo in particular. I wanted to put her up there, and I think she did a fantastic job as Elphaba, and Ariana's okay, but she by far is the best thing of the movie. It's not amazing. It's not as good as number one, but in the mix of the limited films I saw this year, I think it does sit there as number three. In at number two, surprisingly enjoyed it. Got another one of my actresses here, Florence Pugh, and that is Thunderbolts. Or if you take the little asterisk at the end, it obviously got its new title. And the reason why it's also here is it's impressive marketing. And I know it didn't hold on to it for too long, but the change midway through, the engagement that it started bringing people back into the Marvel Cinematic Universe has a lot of potential for coming on last year. And it's actually a real antidote to the Captain America film that was at the start of the year, which I really didn't enjoy that much and was hoping for great things with that. So this is where Thunderbolt sits. So that leaves my number one. Any guesses?
I've got two ideas. Should I just guess them both, or am I only on one?
Guess them both.
Either Superman or Fantastic Four.
Okay. David?
Superman.
Matt had it. It's Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have that fondness for Marvel, but I really liked what they did with the characters. Still a bit frustrating in terms of I wanted more action, but I liked how they sort of developed the storyline, developed the characters. You can see now how it's sort of going to link back into next year's big films. And I just thought it was a really nice approach of doing it in this, like, the style of, you can't really tell if it's 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, a little bit cartoon-like. And, you know, I really, really did enjoy it. And I was sitting here earlier this afternoon and I was bouncing between having Thunderbolts or Fantastic Four as my number one. And in the end, I was thinking about which movie did I really enjoy and I want to see again. And I think I want to see Fantastic Four again over Thunderbolts. But they're both amazingly good in my opinion. But Fantastic Four for me is my number one film for 2025.
Mm. Nice. All right, I'll go with me next. I've got 10, and I think I'm going to shove two other honourable mentions, which are the Frankenstein film and K-pop Demon Hunters as well. I just forgot to write them down. My other two honourable mentions are going to be Sonic 3 and Captain America Brave New World. I still really enjoyed both those two films, particularly what they did with Sonic 3. Just kind of as I was going through the list, they've just got a bit more bumped down. I think Sonic 3 is also a little bit of a victim of kind of coming out, I can't remember if it was late December or early January, I think it was early January, and didn't get nominated at the Game Awards for Best Adaption for some weird reason as well. So yeah, really, really enjoyed that. I like what they're building with the Sonic films, and it looks like we're at least getting two more apparently, so we'll see where those go. Interesting with Captain America Brave New World, because I remember coming away from it in like, okay, I really like a lot of what's here. There's a few bumps and sort of odd bits and pieces, but and I wanted a little bit more from the political storyline that they did, even though you do have an angry president, which you know, thankfully the real one can't turn into Hulk, which is good. Otherwise we would be in trouble. But that was pretty interesting as well. I remember a few people mentioned was as well with that because in the film, the characters aren't supposed to know that he can turn into Red Hulk, because obviously he tries to hide it. But then it's like it was the fist and the shield as like the poster and things like that. And obviously he was in the trailers. So not quite sure exactly what angle they were trying to take with that, whether it was supposed to be a secret to us or not. But obviously it didn't do that. I still liked what Anthony Mackie did as Captain America. It'll be interesting to see him in Doomsday and where they go forward with that character. But I thought that was pretty good as well. Moving into my actual top 10, I've got We Live in Time, which is the film I mentioned earlier, from Florence Pugh and one Andrew Garfield. The one thing that stopped me from putting this higher up has a little bit of like an odd ending. It's kind of your own interpretation kind of thing, and sometimes that can work, sometimes it doesn't. I'm still not completely sure if I liked the ending. It wasn't terrible, it just could have maybe been something else, but still a really interesting emotional kind of journey. Does an interesting thing with its structure as well, like the way it jumps back and forth in time, and you sort of get left to guess as to like where the actual story is. Brilliant performances from both of them as well. Well, that was great. Companion, I'm going to put at number 9. I maybe should have put this a little bit higher as well, but this is, speaking of Sophie Thatcher from Yellowjackets, she's in this as well as, can't remember his name, but Huey from The Boys. He is in this.
Quaid.
Yes. Yeah, Dennis Quaid. Yeah.
No, not Dennis Quaid. That's his dad.
Jack Quaid. Yeah.
Jack Quaid.
Yeah, he's in this film, and it's essentially the idea of you get a, not an AI companion, but like a robot companion, and gets into the questions of, you know, consciousness and consent, certainly gets into the question of consent and things like that. I thought it was really, really great, really enjoyed where they went with it. Thought the ending of the film was great. A tiny little hint as to a sequel that they could possibly do. I'd be up for that if they wanted to. But I like those kind of stories about sort of, you know, whether it's puppets or robots or anything else like that, and the sort of how human are they and what can they feel, and I thought it did those things very, very well. Number eight, I should have maybe put this as my biggest surprise of the year, but Jurassic World Rebirth, which I know not a lot of people still liked. I think it is kind of, for me, a case of, I know Dominion's not related to this, but because Dominion let me down so much, which was the previous one, which was where they sort of were like, oh yeah, the dinosaurs are out in the open world, but now we're going to have most of our scenes indoors, and then went with this new kind of sequel, reboot, revival thing with Scarlett Johansson, connected with the characters in an interesting way. There's like this interesting little family of four that show up. I thought the set pieces were really, really good, particularly there's one with like a little raft boat thing, which I thought was really, really great, and just had some really great dinosaur action in there, which I thought was really, really good. Again, not, you know, the deepest film or anything else like that, but it was better than I hoped it would be, given my sort of hopes for the Jurassic World was a little bit, you know, down after sort of Dominion. So that's one of the reasons I enjoyed that. Number seven, I'm going to put Fantastic Four. Still thoroughly enjoyed it. Still enjoyed kind of, you know, their first proper introduction into the MCU. Be interesting to see where they go with those as well, because they're not the 616 Earth Fantastic Four, but we'll see where that goes with Doomsday. I saw a few people kind of saying they maybe played it safe. I felt that they kind of did as well, but I didn't see that as a problem per se. I thought it was just a case of, okay, Fantastic Four has not gone well in terms of, you know, adapting, so let's just make sure we get these characters in sort of a good way. I love the cast that they picked as well. I thought they did a really good job with that, and yeah, I thought Julia Garner's Silver Surfer was really, really cool as well, so quite enjoyed that. Number six, I'm going to go with Warfare, which is one of Alex Garland and I think Alex Mendoza with this one. Tells a kind of fairly simple war story. It's sort of these soldiers are held up in this particular building. They're looking for certain soldiers and things like that. There's some very, very intense scenes. Some really, really great job done with the audio and stuff. And I love how this film is kind of, there are a few scenes where the soldiers are sort of, they're sitting around and they're waiting and they're waiting and they're waiting, but it's not sort of like, oh, come on, get on with it, give me an explosion or something. It's sort of, because you switch between about six different soldiers and they're all like watching a different thing, and it's like, that intent is almost like a little bit of a Vince Gilligan thing in the way of, okay, it's slow, but you know something's gonna click and happen at some point, and it's that sort of waiting game. And then when things do kick off, they really, really do kick off in this film. And has this great kind of ability to just go from 0 to 100, back to 0, back to 100, but not in a sort of jarring way. So I thought it really, really did a great job with that as well. It's also based on a true story, and they got like the, I remember they showed this thing at the end of the film of what the actors looked like and what the people looked like. So I thought that was pretty good. Some of them, I think, consulted on the film as well. They were like on the set and stuff, so that was really cool. Cracking into my top five, my beloved Pixar coming in here with Elio. Not a film that got loads and loads of attention, and I would say it's maybe one of Pixar's simpler films, but you know, even if you call a Pixar film simple, it's still got a lot going on. It's about this young boy, of course, called Elio, and he's a little bit lost in the world. He can't quite find, you know, where he belongs, to get some family stuff that's going on, and wants to be abducted by aliens because he thinks that's going to lead to kind of being noticed, or, you know, finding the right kind of place and that sort of thing. Finds some alien friends along the way, which I thought was really, really nice. Comes across these very, very interestingly done villains that sort of have a comedic aspect to them, but they're not sort of like jokey sort of villains. It's done really well in that way. Has all the good heart and soul and emotion of a good Pixar film, so really, really enjoyed that. Moving back to Alex Garland, and I think Danny Boyle for this one, number four is 28 Years Later. a great kind of half continuation. There's going to be some other films joining this as well. But 28 years later, coming back with that, some really interesting camera work. You've got, what was his name? Craven and Quicksilver. What was his name? That guy.
Yeah,
the one who played Craven recently, and he was Quicksilver, and he's been some other stuff. Yeah, playing the lead role here, doing a really great job. So this film also introduces like different types of the infected, which I always kind of like that idea. You got like the alphas and all that sort of stuff. Got, of course, an unforgettable performance from Jodie Comer in here as well. Should have wrote her down for best performances, but so many good people to choose from. She did a cracking job with this as well, and should have also wrote this down for best scene. But there's one particular train scene in this film that I just found really, really fascinating in here as well. Moving into number three is going to be Weapons, which I think this guy is going to do a Resident Evil film soon, but takes the idea of in the middle of the night, I think it's 12 kids or something, or a bunch of kids apart from one from a classroom, run off, do a Naruto style run in the middle of the night, and they run off to an area. Poses the question of, okay, why did they run away? While they were running in the same style, where did they go? Why did they run away? And why was it, you know, one particular classroom? You had Julia Garner playing the teacher of that classroom. Of course, she got some questions thrown at her in terms of, okay, all these kids have run away, why are they all come from your classroom? And why is this one kid still there? Like, what's kind of going on with that? Lots of really interesting kind of mystery to that, and I did like the answer of what they come up with, as opposed to you know, why did the kids run away and stuff. I liked what they did there, which was really great. So that was very, very good as well, and some great performances. Got like Josh Brolin and some other people in there as well. And has like a really crazy kind of fun ending. I thought the ending was great as well. Number two, going to go with Sinners. This is from, I think it's Michael B. Jordan. You've got, I can't remember the name of the director. The film is escaping my mind. But a great director from the film as well. And tells this interesting kind of vampire story. And has like some really, really great sort of like music in it. And I remember at the time describing it as sort of quietly awesome. Like, it just, it's one of those films that sort of, it doesn't try too hard to be great. Like, it doesn't sort of go out of its way, and it finds itself kind of very easy to be really, really good, if that makes sense. So some really great performances, and thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed a lot of stuff that they did in that film. Again, with my three lists, I think my number one is kind of a bit obvious, but I'll hand it over to the two of you. What do you think is my number one film for 2025?
So, weirdly, I wrote down a short list for you, and 6, 5, 4, 3, and 2 were all in my short list for you. So I was like, okay. Oh. So the only one, and I've forgotten, maybe you mentioned it, would be Superman for me. As a guess, unless it was earlier down and I didn't note it down.
No, did you mention Thunderbolts in your list?
I mentioned Superman for most disappointing.
Disappointing. Yeah. So then it'd be Thunderbolts.
So it's Thunderbolts.
Yes, it is. Thunderbolts, film I really, really love. And of course, I went to see it. Lots of really, really great character work done in this film, particularly, I suppose, with Yelena herself. Florence Pugh has kind of like a dark opening to this film, but you sort of see what's going on with there. Love seeing this like team get assembled as well, these kind of B-list, although some of them I wouldn't genuinely class as B-list, but it's that kind of, it's a little bit like Suicide Squad idea, but I think this is much better than Suicide Squad. Really kind of interesting, I guess, side group of characters coming together to make a team and see if they get along and how all that is going to kind of work. Then you've got, of course, Bob in this film, who has a little secret of his own, which is very interesting. Got the Avengers Tower involved in that film. I'm surprised that part, not to spoil it, but I'm surprised that part hasn't got brought up in more conversations, but has a very interesting ending in terms of what the title actually is, which I think is very easy to find now, but I'm still not gonna spoil what the actual title of this film is. But it'll be very interesting to see where that goes going forward, obviously into Doomsday, and you know what's going to happen with the Fantastic Four and the post-credit scene and things like that. But I just really, really love this film. There's also the kind of mental health angle in this film, which I thought the film tackled really, really well. You've got the kind of, I think it was called The Void or something, where Bob does a few particular things. And I, apart from, there is only one little nitpick I have with this film, and I think it's more of a Marvel problem, which is the treatment of, what's that character called? The character was in Black Widow as well, Taskmaster. Right. I'm not quite sure what Marvel's doing with Taskmaster, but that was the only kind of negative point of this film. But I think, honestly, with every member of this film, they just improved each of these characters. Red Guardian's fantastic as well. Of course, I put one of his scenes in one of my scenes of the year, which I thought was great. But I just can't wait to see where they go forward. Excuse me, with these characters. Yeah, you've got like the loneliness angle with the whole mental health stuff, which I thought was done very, very well as well. So, and I recently rewatched it, I think a couple of weeks ago. It's now on Disney Plus, of course. So that is my film of the year. Great, you did yours, didn't you? Yes. Yep. David, over to you next. What are your films for 2025?
Hey, I've got five, and they're all ones we've kind of talked about before. Captain America is my number five spot. I did enjoy that film, but I think it was slightly ruined by the marketing, in the whole Red Hulk thing. Really, it's an odd marketing choice to market it so heavily with Red Hulk when none of the characters in the film are supposed to know about it. So it's very strange how they marketed that. And that's not really a fault of the film, it's a fault of the marketing. But that's my number five film. Number four, Mission Impossible, Final Reckoning. I really enjoyed that. I agree with Gray. I know some people were sniffy about it, but I really enjoyed how they ended that franchise. And, you know, like I say, he may decide to come back to it at some point, but I think that was a really solid end to that franchise. Number three, Fantastic Four, First Steps. Did enjoy the casting of it. I really love the production design on that. I think it's really interesting to use that as a sort of setup. I don't think it quite wrapped as well as I thought maybe it could do. I would have liked to have seen them lose at the end, you know, rather than win. I think there was much more that you could do with that. So yeah, I rather enjoyed, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I think there was more you could do with it. Thunderbolts is my number two slot. Very solid film, very enjoyable, fun. Like you say, I think it's got a bit like Suicide Squad, but I think it does it really, really well for that. It's got that kind of vibe to it of the sort of outsiders, mm-hmm. which I really like. So what do you think of my number one slot is?
Superman.
Great, if you're still there. I know he just messaged us saying I think he's having some mic issues. So
I'm here, yeah. I'm having mic problems, everyone, so I just take a while to switch between mute and on the so I know you did like Superman, Dave, when you went to see it, so I could potentially think that could be in your list.
Yes, you are both right, it is Superman. I'm much more of a DC person than a Marvel person. I always have been, you know. I grew up with DC comics much more, and I really like what James Gunn has doing with the whole DC universe. I like the fact that he didn't try and do an origin story. He dropped just right in the middle of, there is an established group set up. He threw in a bunch of other DC characters in there. Yes, threw in a bunch of other DC characters. You know, so you had people like Mr. Terrific, Guy Gardner in there. I love the cameo from Supergirl. I thought that was fantastic. I think that's going to be a really interesting film as well. I'm very much looking forward to see what he does with Batman, because I think that has the potential to be a really interesting, very different Batman film when he finally does that version of it. Yeah, I just thought he ticked all the boxes for me. I was a real fan of that movie, and that is the number one film for me.
All right, excellent. Move on to the last category. I think we'll go in the same order. Gray, what are your best TV shows for 2025.
Okay. So I have some honourable mentions, and I sat here playing around with I played around more with the ones in like 6, 7, 8, and 9 today rather than the ones in my top 4 or 5. But some honourable mentions. I really like Silo. I know it started broadcasting last year, but obviously we didn't get the final episodes until this year. So Silo, honourable mention. Vera's final season, Sob Sob, Crying Eyes. Hacks season 4. The Doctor Who, you know, for all its faults, I really did enjoy Shutigatwa. There's a program on You called I Jack Wright, undersold, but I thought I really, really enjoyed that. Poker Face season 2, Bookish, and the sadly Axe Mid-Century Modern would be up there. But here are my top 10. So in at number 10, a bit of a surprising one for me, because neither of the first two seasons are in here, but I really like this one. Featured one of my favourite actresses of the year. It's White Lotus. Really, really good. I was hooked and I was really sort of looking forward to each episode. Haven't felt like that about a programme for a while. And I thought they did it really well. I do like the tone of the entire piece. And I just, yeah, I've really, really enjoyed it. There was a real good twist with the family, with the Patrick Schwarzenegger was in it as well. And yeah, really enjoyed that. So this is at number 10. In at number 9, a good return to form for Black Mirror. I think there were some fantastic episodes in this season. I think there were more good episodes than medium episodes. And I think if we think about the previous seasons, we had some real sort of question marks over some of them. But yeah, I just thought they did some fantastic things with it. I can't say enough about how much I enjoyed that. That went in at number 9. Number 8, I'm going to pop over to Apple TV for a surprising fan of the comedy Stick, which is a golf-based comedy, a very in the mode of Ted Lasso, I'm told, even though I'm not a huge Ted Lasso fan. It basically followed this sort of young golfer and his mum, and then you basically try and get him to go. He's really, really good, and you follow him, and it's got a supporting cast of like these misfits all trying to get him to be successful, and they've all got checkered histories. There's a lot of like cliches in there, but it was really good. Really, really enjoyed it. Reminded me a lot of the one that's based with this with Harrison Ford, and they're all therapists. Oh, what's that one I'm thinking
Shrinking.
About, Dave?
Shrinking.
Yeah, it felt a lot like that when I was watching it, but really, really enjoyed it. In at number 7, a really good drama from Netflix. We go to Department Q. Really, really well received. And actually, I found out it was a bit Marmite later down the line. Some people really didn't get on with it. And by episode 2, they'd given up. But for those people who did stick by, it was a real trend earlier in the year. And really, really enjoyed watching it. So that's Department Q. In at number 6, minus Pierce Brosnan's horrendous Irish accent, even though he's Irish, it's Mobland. I thought it was really, really, really good. Had some great cast in there. A really bloody, gory, a good gangster thriller. I was really getting into my gangster stuff earlier in the year. And this originally wasn't in my top 10, got put in my top 10 earlier this afternoon because I reflected on those things I really did rate highly and enjoyed. So that was at number 6. And now into my top 5. These have hardly moved since they aired. They've always been within the top 5. And that is, the first one is Big Boys, the final season of Big Boys on Channel 4. Incredibly emotional, very heartfelt. I think also because of the time it reflects of when he was going to university was very similar to my own sort of time scales. It brought a lot of nostalgia back for me as well. And there are a lot of callbacks and like cultural moments that were referenced in the episode. But ultimately, it was a really, really good story and so sad at the end. The last episode, it was a sitcom, but the last episode really, really was very sad, but really reflective as well. In at number 4, The Incredible Amandaland, which was a spin-off of Motherland, using the character of Amanda, played by Lucy Punch. And Lucy Punch almost went into my actresses list earlier, but then I could only really regard this one thing she'd done, and that was that big. Even though she's been in lots of other things, I think 2025, Amandaland is the one that's really stuck out for me. getting a Christmas special on Christmas Day, has been renewed for season two. Incredibly funny, incredibly observant, and the amazing Joanna Lumley's in it as well. So what more could you want from a sitcom on BBC? Then we go to number three, mentioned earlier, is the incredible The Studio on Apple TV. Really, really well done and very well observed. They're filming season two at the moment, and apparently who's who of Hollywood all want to be in it. They all want to play themselves or play versions of themselves. It's been a real interesting sort of take that people want to see themselves on screen, but like to have some of the stars they had was just incredible. And the whole idea they want to make this big Kool-Aid movie is hilarious. And who could they get to play Kool-Aid? And the casting one was the best episode ever, where they decide who the actors should be. So yeah, absolutely brilliant. And then in my number two, which will might surprise some people, but this is where Celebrity Traitors goes in. And Traitors was really good this year, but not as good as season two, which was obviously the 2024 season. But the Celebrity Traitors, however, absolutely wiped the floor with our incredible Alan Carr, with also some absolutely great turns from Joe Marler, Nick Mohammed, even some hilarious, even though they're quite annoying people. Kate Garraway did an amazing turn, really mocked herself in the show as well. And the incredible Claudia Winkleman steering that show, and how brilliant it was. So though that is 10 to 2, and I will hand over to Dave. Do you want to guess at my number one?
It's Adolescence.
No guessing. It is Adolescence.
It's Adolescence.
Matt?
Well, based on what you said earlier, I don't think it's Last of Us, so it's probably going to be Adolescence.
It is. I mean, yeah, it's a done deal. A program that was so fascinating. I have now used it about four times in my own classroom, playing clips and talking to my students about how this could have possibly been filmed and how the use of the camera and like learning about the production that would have, you know, how it got to that point. Phenomenal performances, something different in terms of like the one shot idea. And I'm very happy to have it at my number one. It was as soon as it got aired, it bumped The Studio out of that position, and straight away has been my top thing of 2025 ever since. And that is my top 10 list.
Excellent.
Awesome.
All right. Mine's going to be a little bit different because everybody knew what number one was before they clicked on the episode or before we made the episode. So my guessing game is going to come in with number two, just so that we're aware. moving on to my two honorable mentions is going to be... I did have Extraordinary written down, but David said that was because it was in a different thing. So ignore that one. That was last year. Is going to be Invasion and Invincible going to be my two honourable mentions. Invasion, I know it gets kind of frowned upon, and yes, it had a weaker season two, but I felt came back really interestingly with season three. I felt like they just simplified things, which was one of the things they should have done in season two, and just got things back on track, just got like the show back on the rails in terms of, okay, it's an alien invasion, we won't give you as much, you know, lore that we can't keep track of or handle, which was one of season two's problems. But anyway, it sort of I guess I could have maybe put it in like best sort of comeback or something, but still really good with what they did. And although it hasn't been renewed for season four yet, it does still end in an interesting place for season three, so I'd still recommend the show. Invincible, of course, Robert Kirkman coming in with that, with the, is it fourth, third, whatever the newest season is, I think it was fourth. With that, some really just again big blockbuster fights, especially the I think it was the season finale. Some great character work yet again, particularly with Omni-Man. You know, can he be redeemed after he's, you know, destroyed planets and done god knows whatever else? Very talented voice cast and all that sort of thing, so I really enjoyed Invincible. Let's crack into my top 10. I've got Daredevil Born Again at number 10. Had as well some people frowning upon that. They just, I guess, didn't think it was as good as the Netflix version. I just thought it was great to have this world back, great to have these characters back. Of course, we started in a particular fashion, but, you know, we've slowly started getting these characters back, and I'm just really, like, happy that that's happening. We got John Bernthal in here again, clashing with Daredevil. Got the wonderful Vincent D'Onofrio again back in here as Kingpin. We've got Carolyn and Froggy back with like their proper castings and stuff. I got Vanessa back in the show with her proper casting and everything. So it's great that, although it sounded very dramatic with what Kevin Feige did with the show, like firing everybody or whatever, seemed to have been worth it because the previous version didn't sound like it was going to work quite so well. So I'm just glad for like the journey that that show has gone on as well, and looking forward to seasons 2 and 3, and of course whatever else they do with the other characters. Number 9, I'm going to go in with Shrinking, which I gave for the sort of, you know, most improved show. Just some really, really excellent dialogue, particularly what they did with Harrison Ford's character. I thought his performance was incredible as well. It just had one of those great flows in terms of just going from emotional scene to emotional scene, but sort of like you've got your comedy moments and you've got like your sort of really heartfelt moments, but it manages that really well, which I thought was great. And it just, I don't know, just hit harder in the second season. I know it's because there are some big storylines in this season, but just thought that was really excellent. And you know, brilliant performances across the board, so thoroughly enjoyed that. One which I got to a bit late, number 8, which is Win or Lose, which was one of Pixar's limited series alongside Dream Productions. It basically takes a little kids, I think, a sort of baseball team, and gives you the overall picture, but sort of goes through each member's story. And it turns out they're all, you know, struggling with certain stuff. That's where you get the good old heart and soul of your Pixar stories. And you know, some characters you end up disliking, but then you see their stories and you see their side of things, and it sort of makes you sympathize with them, which was brilliant. Loved the way it ended as well. I didn't think it needs a second season, which is fine because they just pointed it out for a limited series. But yeah, interesting to see, I guess, Pixar stretching their legs or flexing their muscles, whatever, with a couple of TV shows this year. Thought was a nice thing for them to do. Could definitely argue for putting this one higher, but number 7, I'm going to put Foundation. Just some tough competition this year. Again, it's a show that obviously requires 250% of your attention, but it's very, very much worth doing that. Love what they did with the three brothers this year. I love what they did with the whole show, and it's just fascinating with like the show will kind of go, okay, we're going to do this, 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 and this. What do you think of that? And usually it's excellent. And then the finale came along, and it's like, right, now we're going to do this big thing, this big thing, this big thing, this big thing, and do just a bunch of very dramatic stuff. What do you think of that? And I think they know where they're going, even though I don't know where they are, but I trust them to know where they're going, if that makes sense. Because like the finale happened and it was sort of, I have no idea where you're going next, but I'm really, really fascinated and curious to see where you do go, and I trust that you know where you are going. But just such a fascinating, such well done show. Can't imagine that was easy to make at all. Number 6 hasn't finished yet, but I've got to put this in somewhere because I'm just having such a good time with it, which is Pluribus, the Apple TV Plus show. Of course, Vince Gilligan coming back. Yes, it's slow. Yes, it's weird. Yes, it's mysterious, but it does all those things in the great Vince Gilligan way. Of course, we went through Breaking Bad Season 4 this year, which is not eligible because it's a little bit too old. So I can't put Breaking Bad in for this year. But that was great to see. And yeah, just what they're doing with sort of the like the questions that this show poses about, you know, sadness, happiness, and what's the Pluribus going to do next? What is Carol going to do next? What are the rules? And then just, yeah, just those out of context Vince Gilligan style scenes where a character's doing something weird or normal for like 5 minutes, but you know it's going to lead to somewhere, and I think he just does that so masterfully. Plus, you know, all the great camera work and writing and acting and that sort of thing. Cracking into the top 5, I'm going to put Silo. Not only did I enjoy the second season in terms of being a great sort of, you know, comeback or however you would describe that, but just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed what they did this season. I loved the like political tension, especially when they started putting like the barriers on the stairs and stuff, and there was people getting pushed around, and there was lots of tension building and plans building. Loved where they went with all that. Kind of reminded me as well, there's a bit where Juliet's trying to get into a particular place and she meets someone else, and it kind of made me think of like an older Ellie and like a older Bill as well, like Bill from The Last of Us. Those two characters kind of made me think of that, because there's this person she meets who's sort of like very closed off and all that sort of thing. Reminded me of reminded me of him, so that was cool as well. But just love what they did with the second season, and interesting kind of mystery cliffhanger, if I remember, for the second season. So looking forward to seeing where they go with the third. Number three, if you told me this was going to be on my list before I saw it, I would have laughed at you, because I should have put this in as biggest surprise. It's Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. The trailer was terrible, and I remember watching the trailer and being like, what are you doing? And then that like completely put me off. I had no interest in going anywhere near the show. And then, you know, it came out week by week and week after week after week for what, 8-9 weeks, just kept hearing, oh my god, can't believe what Spider-Man's done, it's this, it's that, it's excellent. And I just kind of kept pushing it away because I was like, no, it can't be that good, because the trailer was just, maybe I should go back and rewatch the trailer. But yeah, it just this show is incredible. I cannot believe some of the stuff that this show tries and succeeds in doing, some of which I think the MCU could take some of the playbook from this show in terms of just certain ideas. But it's like it started doing certain things and I sort of thought, I can't believe what you're trying to do, and then just succeed in doing them. I thought it was just phenomenal in that way. Really excellent versions of each of these characters as well, particularly obviously Colman Domingo as Norman Osborn. Thought he was great. I think he'd work probably in live action as well if they want to do like a recast Norman Osborn, whatever they're going to do with that. So I thought that was great. So yeah, that's number three. We will obviously talk about what number one is in a bit, but what do you both think is number two on my list?
Me, I'm going to go for Last of Us Season 2.
No, that's his number one.
No, Adolescence is number one, isn't it?
That was number four.
Have I missed one? I'm trying to track it. I'm going to do our special thing where we...
Number four?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. All right, I'll talk about Adolescence for a second.
okay.
Yeah. No, I'm just looking at that and realised I didn't say the word Adolescence, did I? Yes, yeah, so Silent's number five, number four is Adolescence, number three is Your Friendly Neighbourhood Spider-Man. Sorry, everybody. Yeah, so Adolescence, fantastic show, very, very, very important show for all of its different reasons, especially what's going on kind of in the UK with knife crime. I do remember saying, like, on the podcast that... I do think young people should be watching this show, just because of, you know, kind of does relate to what might happen in their lives and that sort of thing. And again, in terms of, you know, camera work, doing all four of these episodes as one shot, particularly like there's one drone chase sequence, which is like just remarkable. Again, to call out, is it Owen?
Owen Cooper.
Owen Cooper. Yeah, I was just scrolling up. Fantastic performance for his first job. Still great from, you know, Stephen Graham and everybody else in the show. But yeah, very, very important show and really well put together. And did see a few sneaky little articles going, oh, what if Netflix made a season two? You don't make a second season of a show like that. Because first of all, I don't know where you'd go. And second of all, you would just ruin it. So anyway, but yes, Adolescence is number four. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is number three. So with that out of the way, what do you both think is number two?
I'm out. I can't. I've literally thought because you hadn't mentioned it, and I thought it was.
Yeah, that was my mistake. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Looking at my list, trying to think. I can't remember what you actually watched. I mean, there's Stranger Things, obviously. There's maybe that. Seeing as that has come back.
Should I tell you both sound quite lost? Should I tell you what the first letter is?
Go on.
Why?
Why? Oh, Yellow Jackets.
Gray, any further ideas?
That's it. Well, season three of Yellow Jackets. I didn't think that was you. Yeah, go on then.
Yeah, number two is Yellow Jackets.
yes, I forgot about that.
Yeah, which season three did come out this year. Yeah, season four is come out next year. Yeah, got a bit of stick for its third season and some for its second season. I still love this show. I still love where they're going with it. and just to see, you know, where these characters are going to end up, all the sort of mystery, the brilliant performances, like I pointed out a number of them. I could probably have just listed the whole cast in terms of performances. I still think they're doing a great job in terms of, you know, jumping back and forth between the teen versions who are surviving on the island and the you know, survivors, the adult versions. I also just love, particularly this season, how, because things boil over a little bit in the adult storyline and they start getting a bit, let's say, a bit annoyed with each other. And I started finding these characters so interestingly sort of unpredictable, particularly with like some of the things that Shana was doing. But I really love that. I can't wait to see how the show ends. It's a little bit annoying with like one of the things that happened in season two that's kind of changed the trajectory a little bit of where things might go. I hope they can pull off what they're going for with four seasons, because there was supposed to be five. But I loved it again for the same reasons I loved seasons one and two. Again, I know they had to change things maybe a little bit at some point. But yeah, again, just the mystery, the weirdness, especially if you look at Lottie on her own for like some of that stuff, I thought was really, really great. And yeah, loved it still for season three. And I can't wait to see where they go. And yes, as everybody would probably know before you've clicked on the episode, number one is of course The Last of Us season two, which came out in April. Just love the entire massive experience I had watching the second season this year, you know, doing the three podcasts, these sort of late night spoiler free quick episode, then jumping into my spoiler predictions, trying to figure out, you know, what they were and weren't going to include, then of course the main episode on the Wednesdays. And just It was a lot to do, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I will probably aim to do the same thing in season three in 2027. But yeah, just my experience with this game over the last 5 years, and to finally see this second season coming out, and just those areas, those scenes that I've played through and walked through so many times and know so well, and to see them come together in live action, and genuinely being in awe of like just seeing some of those things come to life, and with like the interesting changes, like with the spores and things like that. I love what they did with those things, like the remixes, which I thought were quite good. And then you also have like the new stuff, like all the new scenes we got with Isaac, of course, Jeffrey Wright's character. Love seeing the Seraphites for the first time on small screen or in live action, as well as seeing, you know, Abby and all the other new Seattle characters. Then following Ellie herself on this journey, seeing the theater for the first time, seeing all these scenes come together. You know, Abby going through the snow and going through the fence, and there was a lot of the Leonardo DiCaprio point at the screen meme for me this season of like, oh yeah, this bit, oh yeah, this bit. And then still being, you know, nicely surprised when new stuff comes up or when things are a bit different. I know some people complained about things with the show, but that's their problem, I guess. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed, Last of Us season two, of which I've seen three times, cause I watched, the episode three times a week in the week. And, might go through it again this Christmas, the seven episodes. And can't wait to see when the script is flipped over to Abby for season three and see how they handle all of that. But yeah, that's Last of Us season two. All right, that's my TV list for 2025. David, what do you have for your best TV list for 2025?
Okay, well, I cheated slightly because I had two top 10 lists, which one is returning seasons and one is brand new seasons. But I run a TV site. What are you going to do? I have got some special mentions. Completely agree with you, Gray. Mid-Century Modern was absolutely superb. It's basically a gay version of The Golden Girls from the creators of Will and Grace. Absolutely criminal. They cancelled that after one season. It was superb. So that is, I wanted to give a special mention to Pluribus. It's also on my special mention list. I am enjoying it. It is quite slow, but I am enjoying it. Ironheart, which nobody's mentioned yet. I really enjoyed that little season. Peacemaker season two, I thought they did a really good job of that. High Potential seasons one and two both came out this year. That's a fantastic procedural, brand new sort of addition to the procedural genre, and I think Kate Nelson's just incredible in the lead of that. It's been really, really good. Black Mirror, I think he's completely back on form. Totally agree with you, Gray. I thought that was brilliant. And The Diplomat, season three, again, continues to sort of have a very dark sense of humor and like lots of twisty, turny things going on with that. Really enjoyed the third season of that. So going on to the top 10 lists. So these are returning shows. We'll go through these as quick as I can. Mythic Quest, season four. Ended, unfortunately, got cancelled. What I do love is Apple let them go back and re-edit the final episode so it didn't end on a cliffhanger after they put it out, which I think is something that is unique to streaming, but I thought that was a wonderful idea.
I didn't go back and watch the edited version. I need to go and do that.
Yeah. I think they only made a little subtle change towards the end, but okay. I thought that was a beautiful thing that they allowed them to go and actually give it some sort of closure towards the end. Foundation is at number nine on that list. All the reasons that Matt said, I think that's a fantastic show. They go some really interesting directions. Severance, season two, also on Apple. Really good continuation of that series. Number seven, I've got Reacher, season three. That just a really good action drama. Very, very well written. Superb with Alan Richardson in the lead role. He fits it so, so well. That's been brilliant. Star Trek Strange New Worlds season three, which I know got some stick off people because it tonally, it shifts literally from serious to very silly to serious to very silly throughout the entire season. I rather liked what they did with that, and I think it played around with the very original Star Trek feel of it, and I really, really enjoyed it. Star Trek Lower Decks, another one criminally cancelled after five seasons, but it's one of the Star Trekiest shows out there out of all the Star Trek shows. If you want something that is in the Next Generation timeline and you like that environment, go watch Lower Decks. It's just beautifully, beautifully done. Wonderful animated series. Really enjoyed that. The Last of Us, season two. I've got that at number four. I really enjoyed that. Andor. Season two, which is just phenomenal and incredibly well shot. It's amazing what you can do with Star Wars when you step away from the whole Skywalker thing and take a slightly more serious tone and do something just different and interesting with it. And I thought they did a really, really good job with that. Number two, I've got Stranger Things, season five. I just love the return of it. I've been waiting for this to come back. I do really enjoy that show. I know they've kind of teasing it out for as long as they can, and we haven't seen all of it, but I loved where they started, and I thought there were some wonderful little bits in those first opening episodes, so that's my number two show. Any guesses at number one for this list?
This is for returning, right? This,
returning shows.
Yeah. Returning shows.
I would pretend, well, you do like Silo, but you did like this season of Black Mirror as well.
Silo is not in my list because technically it came out in November, so that's why I've not mentioned it.
But the final episode wasn't.
Yes, you're both cheating.
I'll just punt. I know you enjoyed Black Mirror, but I'll have a punt, but I'm guessing it might be something more sci-fi.
Did you say Strange New Worlds yet?
Strange New Worlds was in there, number six.
Yeah. You already said Last of Us. That was at four.
It's an Apple show. I'll tell you that.
You've already said Foundation. You liked Invasion?
No.
Severance.
Apple show that came back.
I mentioned that.
There isn't Foundation.
Oh, you have mentioned Severance.
Yeah. And it's a show that, it's interesting this, it's a show that criminally gets overlooked by everybody.
Slow Horses.
Yeah. Slow. For All Mankind, we're still waiting for the next season of. You are right, it's Slow Horses. And it's the one everybody forgets
about. Did we not get
an
All Mankind season this year?
Do you know what, Dave? No. It wasn't on your list last year.
Wasn't it? Oh, wow.
No, Slow Horses is on my list last year because I do my tracking. I'm working out the total score and I looked at 2024s and I mentioned Slow Horses last year, but you didn't.
I think I must have forgotten it last year. Slow Horses is just, I mean, it's absolutely outstanding. Gary Oldman deserves, or Sir Gary Oldman these years now, deserves every reward for it. So I thought that was brilliant. Moving on to the second list, which is brand new shows. So At number 10, I've got Department Q on Netflix. I really enjoyed that. I thought it's a really interesting, acerbic kind of lead that you've got there. I thought that was really, really good. Daredevil Born Again, I've got number 9. Lovely to see those characters back. Really enjoyed having them back. Paradise, I've got number 8, which is a Disney Plus show. It's got a sort of sci-fi edge to it. It has a really interesting reveal at the end of the first episode. And I'm very intrigued to see where they go with the second season of that. That was really enjoyable. Number 7, a show that's really not talked about at all, Robin Hood. It's on MGM Plus, which is one of the reasons why it's not really talked about. But it is a brilliant, very grounded adaptation of Robin Hood. It's sort of Robin Hood filtered through things like Vikings and Outlander without the sort of sci-fi stuff in it. But it's got that very, very grounded feel to it. They've done a wonderful, wonderful job with it. And it's 7 episodes in on MGM Plus. I really urge people to go and check that show out because I very much enjoyed it. I think it's a really interesting take on Robin Hood. Number 6, I've got Dexter Resurrection, which is the return of Dexter to Paramount Plus. I think it rights the ship, which definitely went off the rails at the end of the original run. And I think Resurrection really has landed it back where it's supposed to be. I'm looking forward to them doing more of it. I think it's just very, very well put together. Number 5, I've got Murderbot. Again, another show that hasn't been mentioned at all. That's an Apple TV show. It's just a very interesting take on a kind of sci-fi idea. You've got this robot that's supposed to be a sort of security drone, but he's broken out of his programming. It's one of the Skarsgårds. I can't remember which one, but it's the Skarsgård in the lead. And he's just great. It's just funny and kind of dark and really interesting how they've put that show together. I know that it's based on a series of books and there are a number of books that they can work from for that, but I thought that was really good. Number 4, another show that's not being brought up at all, Star Wars Skeleton Crew. I thought that was fantastic. It's sort of what if you slammed Goonies into Star Wars is basically the premise for it. And they do a brilliant job with it. I thought it was fun. It aimed at the right sort of age group with enough in there for older people to actually go and enjoy. I just thought it was a wonderfully fun adventure series. I really, really liked it. So, that's my number 4 spot. Number 3 was Black Doves, which is the new show from Joe Barton, who I really like as a writer. And it's Ben Whishaw and what's the female lead? Keira Knightley is the female lead in it. As sort of playing undercover kind of spies, and it's just beautifully written. Again, has a kind of dark humor to it. Really solid series. That is coming back for a second season, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Number 2, I have The Studio. As Gray mentioned, it's just brilliantly, brilliantly done. Very, very well written. It's an interesting insider look at kind of some potential craziness around Hollywood. I love the fact that they're all, having seen the first season, clamoring to get in on it, which I think is really fun. So I'm interested to see who they have cameo in the second season as well. But it's just very, very well written and very well done. So my number 1 spot, which I think is blatantly obvious, but
I think it's Adolescence.
Of course it's Adolescence. I mean, it by far the best show that has been made in a very, very, very long time. Because it's a show that you could have written that storyline and shot it perfectly normally, and it would still have been a brilliant, powerful piece of drama. And then they go and add this extra layer on top of doing everything in one take. And so you have this extra thing of, not only is it impressive in terms of the story and the drama that they're telling, it's visually impressive, technically it's impressive, It's just an absolutely outstanding piece of work, and I just hats off to them for what they did with it. Some of the camera work in that is just absolutely mind-boggling, and it's one of those things that you don't necessarily think about it when you're watching it, but if you actually study the camera work in that show, as Dre says, he's been using it in the classroom, the camera work is unlike anything I've ever seen. It's just technically brilliant, and it's an incredibly powerful story and an important story. So I think it just ticks every single box for me. It's a brilliant, brilliant piece of TV. So definitely my number one for this year.
Nice.
Excellent. Do you want to know our top three then as a trio?
Okay.
Go on.
We've actually got more consensus than ever this year. Last year we were so far apart, but we do have a top three where we've either two or three of us have all put in. So our number three is The Last of Us Season 2, which got 17 points in total. Number two is The Studio, which also got 17 points in total. And then at the top is Adolescence.
Right, nice. Where it should be.
Nice. We usually do what will be our show of the year, but I think we can all agree it's probably that one. So,
yes.
Yay.
Yeah. And go and watch it, obviously, if you haven't. There's only one last small little thing to do, because I was going to bring up what's our TV show, but we figured that out in mere seconds. Just one kind of choice, I guess, most anticipated show, game, and film. I will go first. Film is obviously Toy Story 5. Video game, rather than being boring and saying GTA 6, I'm probably going to say 007 First Light. Some very interesting things going on with that game. And TV show. What we actually got coming out? There's probably a lot of things I'm forgetting. I might go back to that one. Anybody got any anticipated stuff for next year?
I'm really looking forward to Avengers Doomsday. I think that's a little bit cliched, but I think I want to see where they go with this, and hopefully they can move the cinematic universe in the right direction. Obviously, there will be no game on my list. But one of my most, and I think this is just dangerous because I know it's coming out in January, but I'm really, really looking forward to The Night Manager returning after a very long time away. That's on the 1st of January. I know there'll be so many more programs to come later down the line, but that in particular has piqued my interest. Been waiting for that for a long time. And I love seeing Olivia Colman in sort of TV drama world. So I will be interested in seeing that. So those are my two.
Cool. Me for TV, there are two shows which sort of really stand out, which are, I'm looking forward to The Night Manager, but Vision Quest, which is due out next year,
yes.
Which I'm very much looking forward to that being the third part of that sort of WandaVision trilogy. And Lanterns as well is the other one, which is the HBO series based around the Green Lantern Corps. I'm intrigued to see how that lands and whether they manage to pull that off, because it's got a slightly different vibe to some of the other stuff. So those are my TV game, apart from obviously Grand Theft Auto, because everybody's waiting for that. The other thing that stands out to me, although we haven't got an exact date, I am looking forward to 007 First Light, but Fable. There is supposed to be a sort of reboot of the Fable series, which I really liked the original. It's got a really quirky British humour to it, and it's a sort of high fantasy thing. So I think that is probably the thing I've got my eye on at the moment. I mean, there's other stuff like Star Wars Eclipse and things like that, but the chances of them actually landing next year, I think, are probably slight, a little slim, maybe. And film, certainly Avengers Doomsday, the Spider-Man Brand New Day as well. I think that's the other thing. Supergirl, I'm very interested in. There's some interesting stuff. I mean, Toy Story 5, obviously. Star Wars, Mandalorian and Grogu. You've got, what else was there? Spider-Man Gun News Day, Supergirl. There's the Odyssey
the films
as well.
Next year. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the Odyssey as well, the Christopher Nolan version of the sort of Greek myth, Greek epic. There's some interesting films around. It might actually get me to go out to the cinema.
I think for TV, because I just remembered it's actually next year, I need to keep remembering, probably Yellow Jacket Season 4, see how that wraps up and everything. But because now we've got it in our minds of like shows come back every 2 years, I just keep forgetting it's coming out next year. So yeah. Vision Quest, I'm really curious about as well, just to see where the hell they go with that and what's going to be in that. Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man's also next year as well, isn't it? I'm really looking forward to seeing where season two goes, because that's, I think, supposed to be late next year. But yeah, probably that, Vision Quest, and Yellow Jackets. So, unless there's things I'm forgetting. And yeah, for games, you've got First Light, probably my first one. Very curious to play that Batman game, though, the Lego one.
I would be
more excited for the Wolverine one, but we've like only just seen like the first proper trailer for it. So, and then yeah, there's things like Gears of War E-Day I'm looking forward to, but we haven't really seen much of it. Would say Intergalactic, but that's going to be the year after, I suppose. Looking forward to seeing probably more of it next year. Obviously, that's Neil Druckmann's next game and Naughty Dog's next game. But we will see it next year, but not play it, it seems like. So, all right, I think that just about wraps it up for everything, for best, worst, disappointing, everything else for 2025. Let us know all what your thoughts are on what we chose, any surprises, any things that you are surprised that we did or didn't choose, anything that we left out. There's always one or two things we forget to mention or forget to play or whatever. And let us know what your best and worst TV, games, films, and otherwise are for 2025. But for us, you can of course stay on the website, all the podcast platforms, entertainmentsort.org, and podcast platforms with the same name for TV, games, films, Man United podcast. I've got this, obviously got a United cast tomorrow, for Monday, home to Bournemouth. I think we're at home, yeah, see how that goes. To Bournemouth, gaming talk should be this week, last one, wrapping up with of course the Game Awards, talking about what won and what got announced. Other United casts, we've got Villa coming up next weekend, I think. The Pixar list is going to be continuing, of course, for the next 5 weeks, I guess it is now, in case you missed that last week. I'm ranking all 29 of Pixar's films, including Elio, which of course is on that list as well. Is the first episode out, that's the first four, because it's 29 and not 30, and then the next podcasts are the next five selections, so you can go and see my rankings for all 29 of Pixar's films. Month positive creators, January 1st, 2026. That'll be the same rigmarole for that. And yeah, some other stuff coming out, I guess. There'll be a Call of Duty podcast as well that I've made that'll be coming out soon. So look out for that as well as other things. But yeah, you can support us by, of course, listening to more episodes on the site and the podcast platforms. Word of mouth, social media. Of course, if you can mention our stuff to other people, if they've mentioned the same things and whatnot, social media is either eTalkUK or Entertainment Talk, Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org. That's how you can contact us on different stuff, information in your show notes, etc. etc. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for the ad free podcast with your options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. There's a lot of stuff going on Geek Town. David, I will simply hand it over to you for Geek Town. What's going on?
Yes, I seem to be releasing podcasts every day at the moment. So we've got Geek Town Radio, which you were back on earlier this week, so that was up. That's episode 482. We covered things like Landman and Spartacus, and I'm sorry, Daryl was on that episode, wasn't he? Not you. We've since recorded one. yes, that's why I was thinking Daryl was on the episode that week. So Landman, Domingos was on that episode. Getting people mixed up. So Landman, Spartacus, House of Usher, we talked about Stranger Things, a new film called Son of the Soil as well. We also talked about the big Warner Brothers takeover, what's going on with that as well. So there's all that. So that was episode 482. We've also done a second episode of Geek Stories is now up as well. You can get that on the Geek Town Radio feed, but it has its own feed as well, which is ad free. So you can go and look for Geek Stories. It's sort of geek and historians wedged together as one word. That's Geek Stories episode 2. That's called When Comics Grew Up. And that's about the sort of British invasion of comics and how it changed the comic industry. I really like that episode. That's well worth checking out. We've also got Geek Town Talks To, which is a brand new name for our Geek Town Behind the Scenes podcast. And I talked to composer Greg Nicolette, who is the composer behind things like The Sneetches. He did the animated series Talon, which the pilot of that is available up on YouTube. He's done some horror movie stuff as well. And he was a really, really interesting chat. So that is up. That also has its own feed, which is ad-free. You can go and look for Geek Town Talks to as its own feed, and they're all on the Geek Town Radio feed, which you can find all of this wherever you get your podcasts. So go and find that there. And of course, there is news still going up on geektown.co.uk as well. You can go and get all that and all the air dates and everything else we do over there.
Cool. Yeah. Also, go and vote on the Geek Town Awards as well.
Yes, I'd forgot about that as well. So much
stuff going on, isn't there?
Yes, and the Geek Town Awards are still running, so you can go and vote for your own whatever you want as your favourite things. There are lists up on there. You can go and vote in the Geek Town Awards, geektown.co.uk/awards for that, and you'll be entered into the prize draw, which is a big box of geeky goodies. You can go and get that over there.
All right, cool. So yeah, go to geektown.co.uk, Geek Town Radio, and check out all of those things that were mentioned. YouTube we've got as well, Entertainment Talk Plays, there's some stuff over there. And Gray, where can people find you online?
Follow me online on Instagram, where I'm at Gray Panton. All you're going to see this month is a challenge I'm doing personally called Exercise Every Day December, where I just do some exercise every day to try and keep myself accountable. Trying to get into my wedding suit next year. I'm getting married, so you can also follow the journey of I've had my stag last year or this year in 2025, and next year we have the big event in April. So yeah, come and follow me over there if you want to catch up with what I'm doing.
All right, congratulations and good luck with all that.
Thank you.
All right, I believe that's everything. Thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Recording stopped.